Brendan O'Connor on RTE Radio 1 with Allcare Pharmacy. Get expert advice from your friendly healthcare team at Allcare Pharmacy, Ireland's largest community pharmacy network.
So, some people will be still clinging to that freedom of the summer, yeah, won't they? But some people probably are kind of thinking, looking
good
forward to
get back into the routine. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we all experience change differently. A lot of us love to live in the vagaries and live in the off the kind of routine. And I'd say most of us crave the boundary and crave the routine and crave to be able to predict accurately what's going to come next. And that's kind of routine for us. We are a species that loves routine, and it's good for us to have routine, but we also need to be able to live without routine as well. So what's coming next can be, for a lot of parents and a lot of young children out there, quite unsettling. The idea of going into school into a new environment, maybe if you're starting moving from infant school into, like, say, primary school and moving from primary into secondary school, I would say that's probably the biggest change, the primary, because your cognition is a bit more advanced. You can understand the social interactions. You know who's going to be in secondary school. You know what that dynamic is going to be a bit like. So it can bring up an awful lot for young adults. And the thing is, Brendan, life is change. You know, everything about our life
that's
has changed.
You
know, the minute you're basking in the brilliant sunshine, a leaf falls. You know, we're constantly changing as a species. We're never the same person. We never have the same relationship. We're changing with our friends. We're changing with ourselves. Our bodies are changing. All the time around us is change. And it's kind of one of the biggest issues that people struggle with, because when I look at it and analyze it, I often think it's not so much change that people fear. It's about what might get lost. Or, you know, the second law of thermodynamics is the more you move forward, the more you move towards entropy. And so the more we move to, which means destruction. And so when we think about moving forward, we can become a bit fearful of, well, what the hell does that mean? And what's going to come there for me? And so we can bring a lot of interventions into ourselves to
try and control everything.
Try to control, exactly. That's such an important word.
It's a loser's game.
Which is keeping out the tide with a spoon. You know what I mean? It's a loser's game. Yeah. You're never going to get there. And we can do all sorts of things to try to ward off those feelings. And what we have to teach our children and ourselves at times, you have to relax about change. The more you kind of take control of not having control of change, the more control you have in your life.
Okay.
And it's a really important gift to give your children. Spontaneity, being able to manage themselves and be able to, you know, just be at the party, not imagining what's going to happen next. Just be at the party, meet friends, just to chat with them, go into something. That's all like going to school. I manage that transition. That's building resilience. Every time they go into something new, this is the key thing for parents, because parents often try to kind of protect them from the newness of something, you know, because they're fearful of it. Every time we go into something new and we manage it, we get more data into our brain. I can manage stuff.
There's a confidence.
Yeah, confidence is building. Absolutely. Yeah.
Okay. So let's start. So with the little kids starting school for the first time in September, I think the parents worry sometimes a lot more than the kids. Are they more able for it than parents might think?
Yeah, they are. That's such a good point. Kids are far more resilient. The plasticity in the brain, they're so much more able to manage things than we give them credit for. And we always, you know, as we always said here, we have to manage ourselves in relation to our children and when they're going off into a new period. Of course, there's a little bit of sadness. I felt it dropping down my kid, you know, into primary school for the first, because you know they're starting this journey of about 14 years of moving away from you. And there's all of those things going on for us. Of course, that's just been a parent, right? But it's such an important part of their maturation and development. And particularly if you've got a child, and if anyone's listened to this and they're noticing their child's getting a little bit antsy, no matter what year or class they're in, as it moves towards mid-August and getting towards like later August and the school bag's appearing and the books are appearing, and you notice them getting a little bit anxious, that would tell you that maybe there's a bit of enmeshment going on in your identity with your child. And you have to be careful of that, because what the theory would say, this a low differentiation of self, as in your child's identity and your identity, are kind of caught, so they need you to satiate themselves. And so the idea of moving away from you is terrifying to them. And that's just an important thing to kind of try to break that slowly.
Are we more enmeshed these days now than people would have tended to be traditionally? Yeah,
I think so. Okay. When I think about myself in the 80s, there was no enmeshment. It was like, you know, out you went and you figured things out. Okay. So we corrected that rightfully, let's say. But we've overcorrected it, as we always do as humans. We've overcorrected it. And so we try to protect our children from everything and never to experience any negative experience there, which is motivated by decent desire, but it's not going to be helpful to
your
child.
For ourselves too, though.
Yeah, of course it is. Yeah, it always is.
So practical tips then. So what can people do over the next few weeks to get a kid ready for starting school, and maybe particularly one who might be a bit...
It's really important, because what I'd say with children always, and we're talking about younger children here now, you know, too much difference is too much. If the first day that you're separating from your child is the school gate, let's say, in late August, early September, if that's the first time you're moving away from them, it's going to be problematic. Okay. They're going to look back. They're going to want to cling on to you, and you're going to be there anxious, and the two of you will be anxious going down to the school gate. What I would say to parents who notice that they might have that with their child, start a couple of play dates. And you might be around the play date to begin with, so you're incrementally pulling yourself away from them, and then you're not at the play date, and then they're on their own, and you're reinforcing, God, that was fantastic. What did you enjoy about that play date? So you're feeding back to them, you can manage yourself on your own without me. So if the first moment of being without the parent is going to school, that has the potential to be negative.
So exposure therapy. And this is obviously particularly the case if the child has been at home with a stay-at-home mum or dad.
Exactly. When you go on holidays with your family, all of you are enmeshed in that situation. You're on top of each other for 2 weeks. But if you're there for 3 months on top of each other, they're going to struggle separation. They're going to struggle to separate. And they'll imagine and think about that separation, and they'll analyse it and overanalyse it and be fearful of it. And then when it happens, the biggest response we have to the kind of fear of that is avoidance. And so they'll avoid going into school. And then you'll have a bit of trouble there trying to break that.
Okay. And I suppose it's important in those trial separations, you might call them, and the ideas as well, that at the end, you come back.
Yeah, of course.
Everything goes back.
And you managed it.
Yeah.
And that was
and
great.
And you did it.
Yeah.
You did it. Okay. You were saying there about the avoidance thing. So what should parents be, before we get to avoidance, what should parents be looking at in the first few weeks, maybe the little signs that might tell them that there's an issue or anything?
Yeah, well, I'd always be looking at my child's, food intake and like sleep and those kind of things. What are the stories that they're bringing back from the school? I'd be asking them, and I'd always frame them positively. What did you enjoy about today? And because if you say to a kid, how did today go, you might get grand.
Yeah.
But if you open it up for them a little bit, what did you enjoy about today? Now you're giving them something to talk about, right? And they might say, I didn't enjoy anything, or they might say, I loved the yard and I loved lunch or whatever. But I would say, just watch out for little things, because nobody knows your child like a parent does. And just watch out for little disruptions, or if they're easily agitated, or they get annoyed with you. What parents often, when they're sitting with me in the clinic, and they'd say, he treats me terribly, he shouts at me or whatever, and he might be five, and I'd say, that's because you're his safe space. It's not acceptable, but it's actually a compliment in some ways, because you're the safe space for him to outsource all of his frustrations.
Okay.
It feels terrible, of course, because you're the one who loves him the most, but you're the safe space. And so listen to what your child is talking to you about, and how they're responding to things. If they're easily agitated, if their sleep is a bit disrupted, if they're not eating as much, I would say maybe there's an emotional disruption going on there, and conversations around it would be very, very important.
Yeah, and how do you get to the root of it then? Like, how do you get that out of them, or get them to...
Yeah, depending on the age, of course. Yeah. I mean, there's all different techniques, but if the child is a little bit older... Just really good questions, Brendan.
Okay.
And having a relationship with your child where they know that you don't overreact to things, that you're not going to go down to the school. That's a big thing that children are fearful of.
Okay.
You're going to go down to the yard and shout at the kid who's tormenting them. It's very important that they know that you're by their side. You're not on their side. You're not going to go down to their level. You're going to listen to them and support them and give them some advice, but you're not going to go immediately down to the school screaming and roaring down at the schoolyard or whatever it is, because then they won't talk to you or take their phone off you. They won't talk to you. They won't tell you what's going on if you're the person who grabs the phone off them and says, that's the end of the phone now.
Okay. Back to the small kids for a minute. You're saying as well to watch out for signs of kind of little obsessive or kind of
control. Yeah. What's a really good... Because we're talking about change, right? And we struggle with change. Around 10 years of age is always a very good sign that your child is struggling with change. They'll develop a tic. Right, they might move their eye a little bit, or they might a lot of girls might do trichotillomania, which is they'd put their hand around their hair to satiate themselves, and they'd move it around in such a way that the friction causes it to fall out.
Yeah.
And so that's all about control. And so you can see little things in your child. If they're avoiding situations, that's about control. you know, and they can become quite ritualistic in their behaviours. That's, you know, checking under the bed, checking the door, checking to make sure the door is locked and going down and checking the door again and checking under their bed. Often a lot of the stuff can be caught in prayer as well. You'd hear your child praying excessively. You know, right. yeah, you'd hear your child, and I'd hear parents say this to me a lot. It kind of started with praying, right? And then he became kind of like, he had to say things over and over in a ritualistic kind of way, and then it started to take over his life and spiral his life out of control. Because in psychology, it's called a positive feedback loop. The thing you use to satiate yourself, let's say you rubbing your hair or checking the doors or checking under the bed or saying to yourself, go away, go away, go away, or tapping 20 times or thinking in prime numbers. Those things satiate you in the immediate, but spiral your life out into chaos. And so it's really important to spot those kind of things and help your child to live in a more, I think, fundamentally spontaneous, that they can manage themselves and they can deal with things changing.
Different kind of change then. Some kids could be moving to a different school, like not going on to secondary school or whatever, but if you move house or whatever, and that can be really challenging because everyone isn't moving together into the new phase.
You're leaving your friendship group behind. I've lived this out myself. We moved from one area to another area there about 7 or 8 years ago. My daughter, my eldest daughter, was in second class, and I remember thinking, God, this is big for her to take her out of that friendship group and bring her to a new area. And my wife, thankfully, went off down to the area and figured out what kind of games were going on at the time and joined her into the cricket of that area and met parents and set up play dates. And so she went and met friends like that. And then when she went into school, I remember the day walking in with her, one of the girls jumped up and went, Hannah, and gave her a big hug. And I was thinking, you know, there we go. There's that transition managed. Right. Okay. And ultimately she had to manage it herself. And when she came home, I'd say, what did you enjoy about today? And I got a litany of this new friend and, you know, what happened in the class. And now I've got these friends. And I said, isn't that great? Now you've got these friends and you've got these other friends. And so we kept those other friends coming as well at the same time. And so the transition was managed nicely, you know, it's because I just know too much difference. It's too much for children. You're trying to manage them so that they can, you know.
So, it's a segue. Like,
exactly. Yeah, it's not
and,
too dramatic.
And Camille, you'd be big on as well, like that they keep the friendship
wide.
Wide,
oh, my God, Brendan. Yeah. I really am speaking here from experience. When she went into secondary school, that's something that we really worked out over the couple of years before that, going into hockey, into cricket and into scouts. And when she went into secondary school, all I heard was this bounty of different friends. And then, of course, like girls will do and boys as well, but the cliques will fall apart and they'll be fighting and there'll be all sorts of things going on there and bounce onto another group and bounce onto another group. And I'm like, who's that friend now? Who's that friend now? Yeah. And you're trying to keep up with the friends because there's such a wide friendship group.
So keep your options open.
Because, you know, Brendan, on that point, because it's so important,
what
I see so much in my clinic. Now, this is such working in schools and in my clinic. People, young adults, young, you know, teenagers go into secondary school. And they've got one friend, Brendan, and that friend profoundly lets them down. And they've invested all of their energy and their time in the one friend. And by October or November, they're on their own in the school because they haven't been accepted into this new friendship group that their friend has moved into. And they're on their own. And I'd hear these stories of having their lunch in the toilet because they don't want to be seen to be on their own because there's such a stigma of being like a loner and a loser. That's kind of the narrative. I'd rather be in the toilet at my own. And there's a kid really, really profoundly struggling. And so that's what I'm saying to parents. If you see your child invested in just one friend, I would be trying to widen that out because that friend could potentially let them down and then they've got nothing.
So then the move into secondary school, right? Which, as you said earlier, it's a bigger leap in a way. They're more aware of things and the dynamics with teenagers are much more complex than little kids as well. So what advice have you there?
First of all, your child and your teenager are going to suffer. That's the thing I would have to say to you, first of all. That's a part of maturation, a part of development. Were you excluded, Brendan, from things? Me too. Yeah, me too. Girlfriends broke up with me. You know, friendships collapsed and different things happened, right? Part of life. Painful, right?
Painful.
But did I learn about myself? You know, did you learn about who you are and what you're made of? And did it develop you in relation to others and how to be and how not to be like that? And all of this is so important. I think parents have got the...
But we do anything to stop our kids from having to go through that pain, right?
Let's face it. This is why I said our children will suffer and they must suffer too.
Okay.
Of course, we're trying to diminish the severity of the suffering, but we can't If I defer the grief, I diminish the gift, says Evan Boland in one of her famous poems called The Pomegranate. If I diminish the grief, I diminish the gift if I defer it. You can't defer the grief. Your child has to experience it.
Okay, so what tools can we give them going into secondary school to give them that bit of resilience?
Like? Well, that's the first thing as a parent, is that we don't respond.
We don't fix everything.
We don't fix everything.
Okay.
Because when you fix everything, it's for you, you're fixing it. You're the hero, Dad, you're the best. You know, when I needed that, you were there. When I wanted that, you're there. It's alluring. It's like you'll pull you into it. You're kind of going, oh, I am the hero. I am a legend. You're dead right. I am so amazing. But that's about you, right? And of course, there's you in there. But you have to watch that because that depletes the reservoir of your child's bag of tools. They have to experience these things. Exclusion. It's brutal. It's awful. But you're going to experience it. No one gets through this world and this journey without being excluded or being let down or profoundly let down at times or, you know, not a part of something. And I sit with girls all the time and boys in my clinic who say they weren't invited to this party and it's brutal. I'm just working it out with them, how they, you know, to validate those feelings. You know, because that's the feelings you've had. You have to validate those.
Okay. So they have to feel the feelings.
You have to feel the feelings and then maybe give them some support around it. Let's say if they are being excluded by this group, I would be giving them support around maybe they're not the friendship group that you think they are. And if we weren't thinking about this friendship group, what friendship group would we be talking about? Are there other friends? I mean, that's such an important conversation. What other friends do you like that maybe they're not in your orbit right now? How do we get them into that? And what do you think about those as friends? Because if these girls or these lads are saying this to you or they're posting this about you, maybe they're not your friends.
Okay, so actual social strategies for them.
Yeah, mentoring a little bit there, yeah. But yeah, you can't defer it. I mean, you can't take it out of their lives.
And come here, I know it's a big issue with you and you feel it's still a big issue out there, probably since the pandemic big time. If they're pushing back on going to school at all,
maybe
I think transition year seems to be a kind of a pinch point for it as well. What are the helpful and what are the unhelpful things to do there?
That's really brilliant, Brendan, because it is from the pandemic. There's no doubt about it. Any teacher, any person working in education will tell you that it's more problematic than ever. And I would say the key tip, avoidance at all cost. When your child is trying to avoid school, do not. I know it's hard. I know it's difficult. You can't drag them by the hair and drag them into school. I understand it. I'm working with it every day and I'm around it all the time. But there are certain things we can do. You know where it starts a bit, Brendan? It starts with a note, you know. Can I get a note to get out of Irish? I couldn't do my Irish homework last night. Can I get a note? And you write them, you know, Richard couldn't do Irish last night. I don't want to do Irish anymore. Richard doesn't want to do the subject. You know, you've got to be careful about what messages you give them and how lenient you are and how you kind of conspire with them a little bit to deplete them. The more you get them out of things, the more they realise you can get out of stuff and I don't have to do things and maybe I don't have to go to school. And maybe I just stay at home on my phone. And I work with some really severe cases of like home school refusal. You know, okay. I work with really, and it's amazing how quickly it can change with just a little tweak in thinking.
Okay, so a bit hard line.
Basically. Oh yeah,
hard line.
I would always. Okay. Or just on that because it's an important point.
Yeah.
I would make a negotiation with my child. If you go in this morning and you still feel the same, we can have a conversation later on. That's a key thing because when they go in, they realise this is the exposure. When they go in, they realise whatever the fear was isn't actually real, and that kind of upset and anxiety dissipates, and I can manage this. The more they stay at home. The more they stay at home.
Okay. Just before we, I want to do then college age and stuff, right?
Yeah.
But there's a question there. Babysitting my 10-year-old grandson, putting him to bed, shocked and upset to see he puts four things under his pillow, one being a dream catcher, can't remember the others. When I asked him why, he said they keep him safe. My daughter says she doesn't know why. Any help or ideas?
There's control there. No, there.
Okay,
did you say 10? Was that 10 years of age?
10 years
of
age.
Yeah, there you go. Remember I said at the start there, 10 years. It's normally around 10 where that kind of, you start to see it. That's around control. That's around a feeling of not being able to satiate their emotions. And so they're using something external to satiate themselves.
So what kind of intervention is needed there to stop that from spiraling?
Slowly removing that out of their lives.
Okay.
Honestly, now that's what that needs to be. Not quickly, not too quickly. Slowly removing that so they learn to understand that I can satiate myself, my emotions without these things. That's going to grow. That's a positive feedback loop. It's going to be 6 things. It'll be 10 things. It'll be 20 things. And it will change into different things. It will move from that to something else. It's called a positive feedback loop. Positive means the rate of expansion. It grows really quickly. It's not a positive as in a positive thing. It means it's quick. And so I would be trying to take that away and say, look, you did it without three things. Now you did it with two things. I'd be doing it like that. Now tomorrow night you won't use it. And then I'd break it down like that slowly.
Okay. College, right? First things, the CAO results are on the horizon.
Yeah.
And obviously a lot of people won't get what they
places,
wanted. And
yeah,
go back
yeah.
to like, you can't fix this thing for them. What's the best approach there with that disappointment first?
Yeah. And that is, and that's, I think the first thing to do again, Brendan, is to validate those feelings. That is incredibly disappointed. You worked really hard. The points are inflated because of predictive grades. It's harder to get what you want out of it. And so I get it. And there will be disappointment. Of course, there'll be a lot of people happy, but there will be children who are disappointed. And I would sit with that disappointment for a little bit, but then I would really start to recalibrate, because it's like the old sat-nav. When you take a wrong direction, or as you perceive it, what happens? It just recalibrates again and redirects you, and off you go. So the destination is the same, but you might go a little circuitous route. And what I'm always, when I'm working with teenagers like that, I'm always showing them that sometimes the circuitous route, in my experience, is the best route. And when I think of my own life, and I think of anybody's life that I've worked with, if your life goes straight, how dull would it be at the end of it? You know, we have to understand that sometimes we don't land on things, sometimes we don't get things, sometimes we don't achieve what we wanted. We have to be able to manage that disappointment. I don't think we teach children in school how to manage that kind of disappointment, not getting a promotion, not getting into the college course you want. But there's always ways around it. And it's understanding that is such an important, because a child, and particularly at that age, to say a young adult, they can want to go to Trinity, or they can want to really go to UCD with all their friends, and they don't get there in their undergrad. But I'd always suggest you can go there in your master's. You can go there later on. You can go this way. There's another way here. And who knows what this other way will bring into your life.
Okay.
You know, and
so
that's
quick wallow and then recenter.
Let's acknowledge you're disappointed. That is disappointing.
Yeah.
Let's not internally attribute it as in some sort of failure of you. Let's actually look at the external attribution. The system at the moment, and the points are inflated. It's harder to get to the point course you want to get. That's the system. But now let's get to it a different way.
Okay, I have other college questions there,
yep.
but actually we haven't much time left,
sure.
but I want to read you this text. My son has no friends. He's 17 years old. He's never invited a friend to the house or anywhere. He's a great student. Apparently, teachers say he contributes in class, very close to his older sister, who will be leaving for university this autumn. We don't know what to do to help him, as it's clear he's suffering, but refuses to talk about anything. He wouldn't take a part-time job this summer, and he's going further and further into himself.
Yeah, Brendan. I honestly think there's an epidemic of loneliness, and particularly young boys.
Yeah, that's very stark, isn't
it? It's very hard. I sit with this every day. And I sit with young boys who are 15, 16, 17, in their 20s in my clinic, incredibly emotional because they have no friends. And it's just, it can be a little bit like lightning. You go into one group and you make loads of friends, and you hit another group, and there's not the same dynamics. And some groups can be a little bit negative, and some groups can be really positive. And it can just be like where you land in the school system with that particular cohort. And it can be you're glancing off people for the whole of your experience of school. Then you go into college, you start to think, maybe it's me. I meet this all the time. Maybe there's something unlikable about me. And I would say what that person needs there is to start changing that internal narrative about what they see themselves as being unlikable or not being able to have friends, and start joining some groups in college, because there's loads of groups. Join some groups where your interest might be in, and try to maybe start to make connections there.
Okay. But like, it sounds like the kid is resistant.
No,
they might need help there, might they?
Yeah,
a bit of support on that.
You see, again, it's harder when you're the parent, you know, they don't listen to you. I get that from my own kids.
I'd say the parent can't make a friend.
Particularly at that age. And I would say maybe it's about bringing them into somebody to have a conversation with, to kind of get a bit of mentor. That's more mentoring than anything else.
Yeah, God, that's a very sad text. Yeah,
no, and it's a very popular one.
Okay. Just briefly to finish up. So college students, you want them to become adults, or maybe they're starting work or whatever, independence, all that kind of thing. How do you keep the channels open and keep an eye on them while also kind of letting
exactly.
them be a bit more independent?
Well, adolescence is last until about 25, and with the housing crisis, they'll probably be with you till you're 30. Sorry for the bad news there. But I would always have really clear boundaries about that, because when they move into college, they're going to be out there doing more things than they were doing in the secondary school. And there's all these pillars of support that were around them in secondary school are kind of gone now. You go to the lecture, as you know yourself, you don't go to the lecture, that's up to you. You know, you're moving towards adulthood, you work, you don't work, that's up to you. But I would have boundaries about coming home, this is a really thing I see a lot, you know, coming home and bringing someone back into the house, and you might have a younger brother or sister in the house, and your older brother's going to college and he's bringing back some girl he met in Coppers there. And I was like, that's not something that you'd want in your house, I don't think. And having a boundary about that, saying, you know, you don't bring people home to the house at night. And another thing I would say to parents is, I tell kids, just pure mentoring, don't cook. You're not allowed to cook when you come home. It's always a great idea. I'll throw on a sausage sandwich there, you know, and nearly burn the house down.
Potato waffles and Murray Dick.
But you know what I mean? You need to have those boundaries, because you don't want, as a father or a mother, walking through the hall and seeing some girl or boy that you don't know, and then downstairs there's cooking going on and there's loads of people around the house. You still have to maintain the fact that you're living under your roof. There's rules there and there's boundaries there that they have to obey if they want to be in that environment.
Okay, that was a good one today. Now, that was fantastic, terrific. Richard Hogan, psychotherapist, thank you very much.
Email brendan@rte.ie.